Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the once and future gaming capital of the world, it's episode 14 of Game On with Cody and John. On this episode's big deal, The Old Guard. We'll sit down with James Gazaway and talk about his distinguished career in gaming. And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, Kingmaker. It's old and we played it. We'll tell you what we thought.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, bringing you another episode from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. How you doing, Cody?
Doing well. Getting the last touches put on my ex-president's game for HoosierCon here in a few weeks.
I am looking forward to it. I'm hoping to possibly be the great Franklin Pierce.
it looks like there's going to be some competition. Some other people have come out and said they want to, because they don't know why he's in there.
So yeah, it's got to be something good, right?
Yeah, so people are already staking their claims. It should be good. The characters are done. The plot's done. I just need to finish the player aids, and we'll be all right.
Yeah, we're getting geared up for HoosierCon. That's coming up in just a couple of weeks, and so we've got a lot of great stuff to talk about today. Not just HoosierCon, but today we're kind of kicking it old school.
Oh yeah,
yeah. This episode's entitled "The Old Guard" because we're going to be talking about some old games and talking with a distinguished older gamer.
Distinguished, very nice. Yes, James Gazaway, someone who's been like a father to me for most of my life, and he's seen gaming from about every angle possible, and in our big deal, we'll get to show you some of those angles.
That's right. As the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer, we're interested in bringing you stories about common gamers, and James Gazaway has had just a great long life of gaming. It's been a part of his life for a long time, and we're really excited to bring you an interview with him. So that's your Common Gamer from the Common Gamer.
Absolutely. And as part of that interview, he taught us one of his favorite games, the 1975 award winner Kingmaker.
That's right.
An old strategy game, and it's something neither John and I had played before, and it was very interesting to see kind of one of those older games and how they stack up today. So you can look forward to that in our Buy, Try, or Deny.
That's right. But as always, we start off with the Game On inbox, which starts right now. It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find.
Well, we have opened the Game On inbox, we have cut through the spam, and we are here to give you what we feel is the best in gaming news. But, of course, we always start with games we've played. So, John, what have you played lately?
Well, I've had the opportunity to play a lot of games that I bought recently at Barnes & Noble. It is that time of year again where Barnes & Noble takes all of the games they overstocked for Christmas, and they start off by marking them down 25, 30%, then 50%, and then
$1 or something.
The magical 75%. Right. Yeah. So I was able to pick up some copies of the game Rumus, which is kind of being repackaged as Blockus 3D. Got that for $2.50.
Nice.
And I also was able to pick up a couple of other games, including the game Gift Trap. Now, I've heard of this game before, and I've seen it in my local game store, but it's like $30, and so I wasn't willing to take the plunge for that, but I got it for $7.50.
A much more agreeable price.
This is actually a game produced by a Canadian company, and I don't think they've produced any other games, but it's a game about giving gifts and receiving gifts, and you're kind of getting points, and you're moving along a track based upon, you know, basically how well you know your opponents. You're giving them gifts that are on the board, and they're giving you gifts. And you would think that kind of a theme would be kind of lame As a matter of fact, when I bought the game, I'm like, this is probably going to be kind of lame, but I'm not spending a lot of money for it. But sitting down and playing it, it's something that I think everybody has in common. It kind of crosses gender barriers and age barriers. We all like to receive gifts, and most of us really like to give gifts too. So, and the stacks of cards they have with the gifts, are some of them are really, really funny. So, you know, like a bunny. Or, you know, a pedicure, or, right. You know, you learn to fly. So that's a lot of fun. Cody and I haven't had a chance to play that one together yet, but I'm sure we'll get around to it. So that's been kind of it for me. I've been playing some games with my family, some stuff with my kid. But Cody's had a pretty busy weekend of gaming this past weekend. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Well, it was kind of a going away for James, the person who we'll be interviewing later on in the show. He's accepted a position down in Florida to, he's a pastor, so he's going to be a pastoring a church down there. So we had a big, kind of gaming send-off. We actually went to, my whole local gaming group. We went to, a place in Bloomington, Indiana called the Irish Lion. It's one of our famous kind of restaurants and pubs, that sort of thing. And we played a ton of games, chiefly among them, my personal favorite, my birthday gift, Fury of Dracula. Which it was good to finally teach people that, and people were getting hooked on it. We played several games in a row, and they just couldn't get enough of it. And it did get water spilt on it during the celebration, and I thought it was ruined, but we managed to do damage control on it and save the game, so that was always good.
Now, how many of those games did you play Dracula?
We played three. I was only Dracula for two games.
Out of three?
Out of three.
Okay.
That's good for me.
Yeah.
Because I would normally be four out of three.
And you had fun even the time when you weren't the Dracula character?
Yeah, it came down to the final turn, actually, as it happens a lot in Fury Dracula. It was pretty much one more turn. It would have been a new day and thus the sixth vampire.
Oh, wow.
And we managed to find him and off him right there.
I love it when games have that end like that, though. It's so exciting.
Yeah. It was great. So we played a lot of other smaller card games, but Fury Dracula was the big boy there, and I think I got a lot of converts on it. They kind of raised their eyebrows when I first brought it out, but I think a lot of people like playing it now.
Way to be the gamer evangelist.
I do what I can.
All right, well, we got a couple of news items in the Game On inbox for this episode. Cody, what have you got over there?
Well, Gen Con has announced a new registration system. Now, this may seem kind of ho-hum, but to give you some background, Gen Con, of course, declared for Chapter 11 protection in bankruptcy last year, and they're coming out of that, and they're getting all of their affairs in order. And if you have any experience with Gen Con in the past, you know that their registration system has been finicky at best.
A bit dodgy, yeah.
A bit dodgy, as in it's almost impossible to navigate once everyone's loading in there trying to get True Dungeon tickets.
But it's a lot of fun, though, on the day of registration to go to the Gen Con community forums and see all of the IT professionals that show up on there. It's the only time you see them on the boards all year saying, well, boy, if you had hired me, I could have found a way to blah, 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 fix all your problems. Well, I think they got tired of hearing everybody complain about that, and so they've started a new system. I think it's called Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
And with some other details about that, Cody?
Well, one thing you're going to definitely want to do is make sure you switch your registration over. You may have had a registration in there from years past, but you're going to want to make sure that you switch that over to the new system so you can register for your badge, which you can go ahead and do already. And a lot of people have in turn gotten their badge and their hotel reservations through it. But you want to make sure you switched over, because once registration day comes, you want to be able to get in, get your events, and get out.
That's right. And I think the event registration, I'm not 100% sure, I believe it's on the 19th of April this year, from a source close to Gen Con that I've talked to.
That sounds about right.
So I may not be right on that. If so, you can definitely check GenCon.com, and they'll give you all the details there. But just make sure you get that registration switched over so that you're all ready to go and get those events that you want.
Absolutely. What other news do we have, John?
All right, well, we've got some news of a expansion for the game Dominion. This is a game that we reviewed on a previous episode of Game On, a great card game. And this expansion is being distributed through BoardGameGeek.com. And it's going to be two cards, which basically means that it's going to be a set of 20 cards, because you'll get 10 of each card, basically a deck of each of those. One is called the Envoy card, and the other is called the Black Market card. And they're selling them on BoardGameGeek for only 1 American cent.
I like it.
1 penny plus $4.99 shipping. So it's going to cost you a total of $5. But they're taking pre-orders for that right now. I believe that if you go to BoardGameGeek's website, at the very top, if the ad banner that's there is for the Dominion promo, but you can also probably just navigate in the site there and find out details on that. But the cards look pretty interesting. The Envoy card, just to, if you are familiar with the game, just to give you an idea of what they do, the Envoy card says that you can reveal the top five cards of your deck, and the player to your left chooses one for you to discard, and you'll draw the rest into your hand.
Oh, not bad.
So that's a pretty good one. And there's even the black market cards, even more interesting, where you will create a black market deck at the beginning of the game that's going to consist of one copy of each card that's on the board. And then when you play the black market card, you get two gold or two coins, and then you're going to reveal the top three cards of the black market deck, and you can buy one of them immediately and put the unbought cards at the bottom of the deck. So it gives you an opportunity to sort of buy a card on the sly there.
Like,
so
it.
That's kind of a neat one too. So be sure to check that one out if you're a fan of the game Dominion.
I think you'll buy that game.
Oh, it's a good
one. I really
one.
Do.
And I think later on this year, Rio Grande Games is going to be producing a full expansion to that game.
Nice.
So even more cards to play with.
With better box art, hopefully.
I hope so. Well, that just about wraps it up for the news for this episode. So now it's time to take another trip to the lunch table. The lunch table. When you're on the job, what better way to spend your lunch hour than playing games with good friends? Let's see what's on the lunch menu this week. Well, welcome to another edition of the lunch table. We had our premier lunch table episode last episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed it, where we reviewed the game Rorschach. This episode, we're going to be talking about another sort of party-style game called Backseat Drawing.
And I'm going to be jealous of not working with you, where you have a bunch of gamers on call.
I think this may end up being the trend with this segment.
Yeah.
Cody sits alone here in the studio while we go off to lunch and play games. But this game is from Out of the Box Publishing, and it was produced in 2008. It's for 4 to 8 players. Or 4 to 10 players, depending on which part of the box you're looking at, because the side of the box says it's for 4 to 8 players, the back of the box says it's 4 to 10, but it can definitely handle a large number of players. So basically in this game, it's kind of a drawing game. If you've ever played Pictionary, or maybe Win, Lose, or Draw, that old like 80s game show, you remember,
nice.
You remember that?
With the sweaters and the
tightly curled, permed hair.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
nice stuff.
The huge white paperboard. That was nice.
Right. So in a game like Pictionary, it's basically you draw a clue, and then you draw, and you try to get the people on your team to guess what you're drawing. In this game, it sort of takes that concept and turns it on its ear a little bit, in that you're going to have one person who's drawing on a white erase board, but the twist is that person who's drawing does not know the clue. They aren't the person who has looked at the clue. There's a second person that they call the director, who is going to look at the clue, and they are going to give instructions to the artist, to the person who's drawing, on how to draw that particular clue. And then if you have a larger number of people, then the other people on your team are going to try to guess what that is. So you have two teams that are competing at the same time, and these directors are the only people that are going to know the clue. So that means you have a lot of rules as to what you can and cannot say. So the person who's the director can say the name of shapes, draw a square, draw a rectangle, draw a triangle, lines, curves, anything like that. The director cannot point, cannot use their hands in any way, and can't say to draw a particular object. You know, you can't say draw a handle on this rectangle or something like that. It can only be shapes.
And you can't draw letters or numbers.
Right, you can't draw any letters or numbers.
Draw either. An H, you know.
Right, I think the best you can do is that if you've drawn a big picture and you want to draw attention to a particular part of the picture, you're allowed to instruct your artist to draw an arrow to a particular section. So that's about it. You're going to go around the circle, and each person's going to get an opportunity pretty much to be an artist and be a director. And if you are the first team to correctly guess what's being drawn on the board there, then you're going to get that card, and the first team to 7 cards is the winner. So it's a real simple game, and a very intriguing one. We've had an opportunity to play it a couple times, and we also had an opportunity to play it at the lunch table. So why don't we go to the lunch table right now and see what we thought of the game. All right, well, here we are once again at the lunch table, and today we had an opportunity to play Backseat Drawing from Out of the Box Games, and we've got 4 folks around the table today. It's me, and to my left we've got Nathan.
Hello.
And David.
Hello.
And
bow chicka bow wow Lloyd Hudson.
aka Single Elf. He's not doesn't have any black cherry Faygo today, but he is sporting a
Diet Pepsi.
The brand new Diet Pepsi.
No, oh, I didn't get the Max.
Didn't get the Max.
This is the woman's one, not the men's one.
Yeah, yet you still won the game.
Still look good though.
So we had a chance to talk about the rules of the game, and so we just played a 4-player game. The game supports up to 8 players. But with a 4-player game, the person who is the artist is also going to be the one that's guessing. And then you'll have your director or the other person on your team giving the instructions. So I just wanted to just throw it out here as to what your opinion was here at the lunch table of Backseat Drawing. Single L.
My opinions on Backseat Drawing were that it was a very fun game. No, man, this is back-to-back weeks of just not enjoying the
Didn't
game.
Like it, huh?
No, oh, wow. I'm feeling bad. I used to be the person that enjoyed every game that you gave to me.
Yeah.
And that game, I felt frustrated by the game, more so than enjoying the game. But those were just my thoughts.
Well, this is perhaps because you're becoming a more discerning gamer. Because when I first met you, every game we brought out, it was, oh, this is great, this is awesome, because you hadn't seen it before. But it seems like you're getting a little bit more discriminating in your tastes.
Maybe hanging around Cody and the game snobbery that I have obtained since then. All I can think is that the game was no magic, that's for sure.
Few things are, right?
Few things are as golden as magic.
Well, David, Nathan, what did you guys think of the game? Now that Lloyd has brought us down to the depths of despair.
I feel down about the game now. I felt pretty good about it before. Thanks, Lloyd.
I'll do what I did last week. Never mind. It was a pretty good game, really.
Okay.
No, maybe it's because I'm not quite the gaming snob that some people might happen to be. But and as you will probably allude to later, a lot of it depends on the type of group that you're with and the type of people that you're playing it with. I can see certain members of my family absolutely loving this game and myself enjoying it playing with them. But there's a couple of people that I would not enjoy playing this game with, nor would I even introduce this game to, because they would get frustrated with the whole drawing thing. No, actually my in-laws would probably be the better end of this deal, because they're creative enough and that they're more open-minded. You get some people that are afraid to draw or bad with trying to give descriptions or give directions, they're going to certainly get frustrated and not enjoy the game.
I was afraid to disappoint you, David.
You didn't. We won, so it's okay. We did great. But I mean, if you get the people that are lighthearted and don't mind going out on a limb and taking a stab at it, I think they would truly enjoy the game. So I'm kind of teetering. Again, it depends on who I would play it with.
I think that's some of the criticism that I've heard about this game is that it can be frustrating, and some of that frustration can sort of overshadow the fun you might have with the game. With a game like Pictionary, where it's very similar to Pictionary because it's a drawing game, so there's some frustration that exists in that sort of a game because the person who's drawing is trying to get you to, you know, it's like charades or whatever, you're trying to get that person to guess, but when the person who's drawing doesn't even know what's going on, it kind of doubles the frustration factor. Nathan, what did you think about that?
I agree with David with most of everything about the frustration factor. I enjoyed it. I started to get frustrated at certain points, but I wanted to see what the next element of the game was going to bring, as because some challenges were easier than others. So I feel it's fair, but like David said, when you bring in different types of people and different personalities, I can definitely see people getting frustrated and just throwing the game across
being
the room.
Done with it, yeah.
Yeah, and being done with it.
It reminded me of the game Password, where it's listing out those words you can't say.
It makes you focus on them.
And I always say them, because I just can't help myself. It's like...
That's a taboo, right?
Is it taboo? There's a password, too, where there's certain words you can't say. Isn't
yeah.
It?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And at the beginning, when you were given the directions and saying you can't say these types of things, I find that's the only thing I can think about, and it hurts.
One of the best ones in our game when we played was the clue was water. And... I found myself wanting to give directions on how to spell out the letters H2O, but just do it in form of lines. Draw a horizontal line, draw a vertical line. Oh, it's an H. What do you know? Now, what about if we had different number of players in the game? Because we had 4, which is the minimum. If you play with 6 or 8 or even an odd number, you're going to have more than one person guessing on a particular card. And do you think that would change things a little bit if you had that kind of interaction?
I think it would for me, it probably would increase the fun ability, as to say, about the game. Because you get more creative minds, more people looking at it differently, and people looking at it side to side versus on, you know, orientation to the card when you're drawing, I think would also increase to the enjoyment.
It would definitely become more competitive at that point, the more people you had involved. But overall, the entire game reminds me of just the drawing portion of Cranium. There's a portion of that game where you draw blind, and that's that's kind of what the entire game reminds me of, which.
But you're
most people
at it,
that I play
really
Cranium with don't enjoy that part of the game, so this game might not be for them if that's the case.
Oh, that's a good point. I forgot that. It's very, very similar to that. Yeah. So, okay, after having played this, we'll just go around the table here, and you know, here on Game On, we use our buy, try, or deny rating system, and I just want to go around the table and start with Nathan. Backseat drawing, buy, try, or deny?
Try.
Give it a try?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, David?
I think you have to fall into two different categories. Again, if you have the people that are open-minded and enjoy these types of games, I think it's definitely a buy. But if you got split family, it's probably just a try.
Okay.
I totally give it a buy. I mean, with everything. No, that's true. No. I would give it a try. It would be a try for me. I think a lot of it, too, people that aren't artistic at all almost get afraid when they have to draw something. So
but you guys, you know, you did way better drawing stick figures and whatnot. It seemed to work out. You get a fast
get
result.
Elaborate.
So, yeah, if you stay away from elaborate drawings, you should be good. You should be golden at drawing ability.
This
is
the game for the non-artistic person that just wants to draw circles and triangles.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, draw integrity.
You don't have to draw, the Mona Lisa,
but
you
do have to draw Lemon in one of the cards. And
That was tough.
Let me tell you, our version of Lemon looked a little bit like a gong to me. So.
Mine started out as a golf ball. So
I thought it was wind chimes.
Wind chimes. That's true. That was
wind chimes. Wow.
Lemons on a tree equal wind chimes.
So, you know, that's the three tries, and I'll probably give this game a try as well. Although I had an opportunity to play this with Cody and with some of his friends and a group of six players, and I think it was a little more enjoyable, not because of the company, I promise, but I think having more players does make it better. So I think if you played with a full complement of eight players, I think it could be a real raucous, sort of fun party game, as long as people don't take it too seriously. But we all still have smiles on our faces here, and I think it's a pretty good game. And so that's it from the lunch table, and we'll take it back to the Game On Studios.
Now, I don't know why Lloyd would say that playing a game with me would make one cynical, because I am open and accepting of all games.
No, you're always a sunny individual.
That's right.
Yeah, you give every game a fair shake.
That's right. Jeez.
I'm
coming for you, single L.
I wouldn't feel too bad, because... Lloyd has definitely become the statistical outlier in the data set there, to use a science
nerd
term. Like, everybody says, oh, try. He's like, buy or deny or I don't know.
Something that's not what you said.
Exactly.
We love you, Lloyd.
Yeah. So it seems like kind of a try for this game. And so now we'll come back to Lonely Cody here.
Hi.
Who didn't get to play
with us.
Still
here, thanks.
Like I mentioned, we did get a chance to play this at Cody's birthday party with about six people. And I thought we had a real great time playing it. So I'll go and ask you, Cody, for a backseat drawing, buy, try, or deny.
It's going to be a buy.
Oh, my.
Yes. I think I'm very much a firm believer in only having kind of one type of game for each kind of genre, subset of a genre in your gaming collection. Mm-hmm. I think this is the quote-unquote drawing game to have. I think it beats out Pictionary because there's not a lot of downtime. Both teams are going at the same time, and everyone has something to do, whether directing, drawing, or just guessing. Everyone's got something to do, and you can even play off the other team a little bit. Like, if you don't really think your guy's getting it, you can kind of, like, peek over at the other team and, you know, see what they're doing. That happened a lot when we played that six-player game. But
yeah.
I think it's fun, and it can get frustrating at times, but I think Pictionary can get more frustrating. Where,
sure. Well, really, a lot of those party games get frustrating. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the bad things about Cranium, I think, is that's a game that everybody partially hates. Because
yeah.
No one likes charades, clay, drawing and trivia all at the same time, so
right.
At least this is just, you know, one of those categories, the drawing category.
Yeah, and this was a fun one. It was light, it didn't drag on, and it moved quickly, and it was a fun spin on the drawing game. So I give this a wholehearted buy.
All right, so that's a buy for Cody, a try for me, and pretty much a try from everyone that was around the lunch table. So I think that's overall a positive review for Backseat Drawing. And you know, when we have a positive review like that for a game, what better way to promote that and to validate that than to give away a copy?
That's setting a dangerous precedent.
Yeah.
If we ever review Descent, well, you've won it now.
I have to change my list of games we're going to review.
Very good.
Well, anyway, we do have an opportunity to give away a brand new copy of Backseat Drawing, courtesy of Out of the Box Games. And
thank you, Out of the Box.
Yeah,
Games.
We thank you so much for giving this opportunity to give one of your games away as a prize.
And you know, I made the apples to apples finals in a Gen Con tournament like a few years back.
You're lying.
No, I'm serious.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's funny.
The grand prize would have been the game, which I bought anyway while I was there. So
there weren't like hundreds of people in this then, I guess. Huh?
It was a good amount.
Okay.
I got to the final table.
Did you get like a ribbon or anything?
No. I finished like fifth or something.
Like it's like World Series of apples to apples.
Yeah, there
like,
wasn't a crown if you won.
Yeah, they don't pour like cards onto the table like the money and the World Series of Poker.
The contest, John.
Okay, sorry. So for this contest to win a brand new copy of Backseat Drawing, what we're going to do is we're going to play a round of Backseat Drawing with you, the listener. So what we'd like for you to do, if you want to enter this contest, is go and grab a piece of paper and a pencil.
We'll wait.
And what we're going to do is Cody is going, he has a clue. He has a particular.
It's rare.
He finally got a clue. And he is going to describe how to draw a particular object or thing. And we'd like for you, the listener, as he's describing it, to draw what he's saying, just like you would in a game of Backseat Drawing. And then after he's finished, take a look at what you've drawn there. And hopefully Cody's done a good job of relaying it and you've done a good job of drawing it. And, whatever you think he has described for you, we'd like for you to send an email to the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep. And tell us, you can just entitle it Backseat Drawing Contest. And then just tell us what you think the answer is, what was being described. And we'll throw all the correct answers into a hat, and we'll pick a winner. So.
Assuming someone gets it.
Yeah, we're hoping at least one person gets it. So, otherwise, Cody's going to get the copy of Backseat Drawing.
Yeah. That's a win-win, right?
Yeah, there you go. So, all right, Cody, I'll just kind of kick it over to you, and go ahead and begin your description.
Okay. So, here's what you're going to do. You're going to draw a rectangle, and this will be a vertical rectangle. Go ahead and draw that, and then inside the rectangle, I want you to draw two squares on top of each other, and these squares should be almost the width of the rectangle that you drew. So right now you've got a vertical rectangle. There are two squares in it. Now in the top square, I want you to draw a small circle right in the middle of it. And then in the bottom square, you're going to draw two circles kind of at a diagonal going from the upper left corner to the bottom right. And that, and then finish it off, draw a horizontal line right in between the two squares, and that should give you the item.
All right. Well,
you think?
Yeah, no, I think you did a good job. It's a hippopotamus, right?
Exactly.
All right.
It is. Pete Rose, we're looking for.
Pete Rose.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so, you know, feel free to rewind and listen to that description again and send an email to the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com and let us know what you think that is. And if
My apologies in advance.
And if you get it right, then you might win a copy of Backseat Drawing.
And maybe that degree of mine will come in handy.
Maybe that art degree will get you somewhere. All right. Well, I think that just about wraps up the Game On Inbox for this episode. Let's get into our big deal where we talk with Mr. James Gasaway.
Verily and forsooth.
Prithee. And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal? Well, today on this very special edition of The Big Deal, we're going to be talking with a very special guest that we brought. We're actually at his house right now, and we've been talking a little bit about kind of old school gaming, and Cody's actually been gaming for a very long time in his young life, but for me, I've really only been a gamer for about 5 or 6 years now. And so we wanted to bring on a special guest who has been gaming for far longer than that, for upwards of, well upwards of 30 years, I would say.
And then some.
And then some. But we'd like to welcome James Gazaway to Game On with Cody and John. And Cody has known Mr. Gazaway here for a rather long time in his life. And so I'm going to let Cody kind of take over here and lead our interview here. So again, thanks for joining us, James.
All right, for those out there who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do to pay the bills?
Oh, let's see. Most of the time I spend in the military, just getting off of active duty and going back into parish ministry.
Now that's a parish, P-A-R-I-S-H, right? Not P-E-R-I-S-H.
Right. That just pays the other bills, but we have to deal with that occasionally too.
All right. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in gaming. What started this whole downward spiral, as it were?
Oh, I don't look at it as a downward spiral. I see it as an upward progression. Actually, I started out playing card games with my family back in the country. And we'd do things like gin, rummy, those kind of card games, canasta. Worked from there, got into board gaming a little later. When I was about 5, started doing Monopoly, and then moved on to the hard stuff like Sorry, Parcheesi.
Definitely an upward progression there.
Yes, definitely. You know how it is. One more game, please. Just one more game. Look, they just came out with a new one here. Well, what's this one called? Oh, great. Let's try this. Candyland.
Wow, you're really hitting the high points here, James.
There you go. But from there, I worked on gaming, enjoyed gaming, all kinds. Historical gaming, board gaming, war gaming, card gaming, you name it. Got involved with it, fantasy role-playing gaming later on in college and beyond, and just been involved in all kinds of aspects of it, through cons and through playtesting, working with folks as they do game development.
Now, on the fantasy role-playing part, you actually got started with D&D right on the ground floor, right, when it had evolved from a medieval miniatures war game.
Back in the days when Chainmail came out, yes. Doing some different kinds of wargaming there. Probably one of my earliest wargames was Tactics 2, and from there going over to Panzerleader, Panzerblitz, a lot of the World War II type stuff. And Chainmail was one of the tabletop miniatures that was out, where you're using 25mm scale figures, medieval combat. They started adding in some fantasy figures to it and some fantasy rules, and before long D&D was up and running. Tactical simulations came just plain old TSR.
Now, is that something you just sort of found in a store somewhere? Or how did you find out about Dungeons & Dragons when it came out? Did it come out with a lot of fanfare, or was it kind of an underground thing? Or?
It was more in the college communities and an underground type of thing, really, at that point. You'd see it in game shops occasionally, or specialty stores. What happened was one of my college roommates, after we'd gotten out of school, invited me over one evening to his home, and went over, and he says, "Let me show you this new game that came out." So, okay, let's see what we got. And he showed me a player's handbook, and it just went from there.
And now D&D is actually something that's stuck with you to the present day. You've developed your own world, and as you've traveled around, moving from place to place, you've carried it with you. So tell us a little bit about this world.
Oh, the world of Protolan. As James Thurber put it, it's my world and welcome to it.
Cool.
It's started off as a place where I was playing in as a character, doing fantasy role-playing. And as time went on, the DMs and other players, we would trade out ideas and work on things. And when some of my characters were getting up to higher levels, 10, 12, 14 at that time in first edition, they were getting pretty powerful. Of course, you have to realize dragons back then only had 200 points max. And so to get a character that could do a fair amount of damage rather quickly soon became tiring to play. There wasn't the challenge there. Mm-hmm. So you started working on developing from being a player more into a coach, into a DM and a game master, and working out from that place where I'd started with where I had my keep established, turning that into an entire world that built out from that.
Now, you've had several different groups play through the world. If you had to just ballpark figure, how many different individuals do you think have played Protolan at least once in their lives?
Oh, I'd say probably 150 to 200.
Quite a bit.
Wow. Now, one of the things that I think that is very interesting is the fact that your chosen profession or career has been both in the military and also in the clergy, and I know that those are two demographics that that I don't normally hear of when I hear about gaming. You know, usually, unfortunately, the stereotype of gaming is the 37-year-old tech support representative who lives in his parents' basement, you know, and plays on the weekends, you know, and you know, but you are someone who both has a family and is also, you know, part of the military and a part of the clergy. Have you ever found challenges that have arisen due to the fact that you're a part of both of those things and also a gamer?
Oh, yes, you run into that all the time. Again, it just depends on the individuals that you're working with. Some folks are very open. They see it as recreation and as pastime and don't think anything of it. Other people, even outside the church as well as inside the church, can look at gaming and fantasy role play and say, ooh, that's of the devil. You got to put that down and get away from it. Again, anybody can take anything, whether it's Monopoly or D&D or simple card games, whatever, and turn it into something that just becomes consuming. You know, there's a reason why Gamblers Anonymous is out there. Hmm. People have taken cards and gone too far with them, and it's become controlling to them. Same way with board gaming. You have people that devote all their lives to pleasure and the pursuit of happiness to the exclusion of daily living, taking it way too far. And that's a problem.
Have you ever found that I've sort of found that role-playing games might be a little bit easier to fall into that trap of overly immersing yourself, because it is kind of a game of the imagination. You can play Monopoly with an imaginative bent to it. You know, you can imagine yourself to be this tycoon, I guess. But when you're in a fantasy role-playing environment and you're actually playing out the adventures of a particular character, it seems like that's something it's just more conducive to that immersion more than other games.
It all depends on how you approach it. Mm. You know, I've seen folks play Monopoly where they've gone out on a college campus and organized a live play game where they're having to use radios and bicycle messengers to get people to go around the blocks to catch up with the players as they go from house to house. And
wow.
You know, there was a Monopoly game final that was played in a bank vault using real money under armed guard. You know, things like that. I mean, it's how far do you want to take it?
I wish stories like that would make the news instead of the kid in the black cloak, you know, does something stupid because he was playing D&D, you know, apparently.
There's a proper place for entertainment and recreation in life, and keeping things in balance is the key thing there. It's a diversion. It is an escape, but it's only there to allow you that time to escape, to recreate yourself, which is where we get recreation from, to recharge, to restore yourself, to get your mind out of the stress, to take a break from the problems of life. So where you can come back with a clear, open mind and deal with things. It's just one of the tools to use in living. It's not life itself.
All right. Now, in your military service, you've had several tours, including one to Bosnia and one to Iraq, and you had extended stays in both locations. How did you keep the gaming going there, and do you have any funny or poignant stories from either of those experiences?
Oh, there are a lot of stories. A lot of people in the military get involved in gaming, board gaming, tabletop gaming, fantasy role-playing gaming, live-action role-play, all sorts of things, SCA, LARPing, whatever. If you're on an extended tour overseas, especially like with Navy folks where they're on board ship for 6 months, there's only so many things you can do. Look at the same four bulkheads every day or passageways. It's not like you can just walk off the ship and go down to the corner, especially if you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Same way in the military, you know, you're in the middle of Iraq or the Balkans or wherever. There's not a whole lot of places you can go, safely anyway. And so what do you do to get your mind off of the same monotonous everyday routine, the same Groundhog Day events? And that's just one of the ways of dealing with it. It's just an outlet. And there have been a lot of folks that I've come across that have played. I remember last year in Iraq, there were a bunch of guys sitting around the table over in the MWR, the Morale, Welfare, and Recreation area. And it walked in, and they said, quick, put away the books, the chaplain's coming. Don't let them see that. You know, what's going on over here, you know? You know, and I didn't know what was going on. I thought, oh, great, what are they looking at now? What are they passing around that they shouldn't be? And come to find out, what are y'all doing, you know? It's, nothing, Chaplain. We're just goofing off. You know, what are you doing, though? Oh, well, you know, and I'm looking around, and I see player's handbooks and a DMG, Dungeon Master Guide. You know, you're all playing Dungeons & Dragons, aren't you? Yes, Chaplain, we are. I said, okay, I got my dice. Huh? What? Sure. What edition are we playing? And, you know, just sort of went from there, and we had a good time. And it broke the ice, and we were able to get along and open up some doors, and people were talking and carrying on. And before long, the last thing they were worried about was having to go back outside the wire, outside of the, into the streets of Missoula. We were just having a good time, relaxing.
Now, you said that when you're growing up, gaming was very much a family event, and you took that to the next generation so much. How has gaming influenced your family life now that you're a husband and a father?
Oh, goodness. Well, we've always had folks over. We've always played games. We've always been involved in gaming activities. As kids were born and grew up, they saw it, wanted to get involved with it. Sure enough, they joined us in play, and we had all sorts of fun things.
All right, with you having been involved in gaming for so long, and even with Protolon, we still use the original, kind of the first edition rule set of D&D. That kind of gives you an interesting perspective on the newer games that come out, both board games and role-playing games. How do you look on some of these new editions of games?
I try to keep an open mind on them. I enjoy a lot of the newer games that come out. I like to see what they're trying to develop or what they're producing and offering to the public. I've worked with some game development in the past, been to a lot of different kind of cons and places where games have been premiered and debuted and talked about, voted on favorites, all those kind of things over the last 30, 40 years. But, you know, when you come right down to it, there's only so many different ways that you can produce a game. You know, whether it's board game, tabletop game, role-playing game. And even within those divisions, there's only so many things that can be done. It's what can we do different, or how does it come out new, or how did they take an old theme and liven it up or change it around? Or have they come up with something entirely new and different? You never know what's going to happen. That's why you go out and you try them.
So what's come out recently? What is a newer product that's come out that that you've enjoyed?
Oh, goodness. There's been quite a few. Red Dragon Inn is a fun one.
That's a good one.
I've enjoyed that. Let me think for a minute.
Don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's okay. I'm trying to remember which ones are the new ones and which ones have been around for a while. You know, because if I say something like Carcassonne, obviously you're going to deny that, but... No. Red Dragon Inn's been a fairly new one. Ink and Gold.
Ah.
There is a fun one.
The game on favorite there.
Yeah.
The classic already.
The classic.
Classic. Yeah, and you know, you get some of the newer games like Magic, even though it's been around a dozen years or 15 years. But it's still new editions coming out all the time, new play changes.
Yep.
A lot of the old stuff getting redeveloped in different ways. How many different forms of Monopoly are there out on the market today?
Too many.
Way too many.
Hey, there you go.
But still, it's the same classic game, just in new settings.
Absolutely. So what do you see as your future in gaming and the overall future of gaming itself?
Gaming has been around for the last three or four millennia. It's not going to change. It's a way people have to relax and enjoy themselves and to refresh themselves, to recreate themselves, and to just take a break from the rigors of daily life. Go back into the pyramids, you can find cups and balls, you can find second, you can find early board games. You look at the history of gaming. Alfonso XII of Spain put together one of the first catalogs of games from his time period. You know, if you're looking in the turn of the second millennium, common era. A lot of things they were doing then. Nine-man Morris, forms of chess and backgammon. History's been there. And who knows where it's going to go to. Somebody may be coming out with a nice three-dimensional game or four-dimensional game yet in the future. But whatever it is, people's imaginations are going to run, and gaming is going to develop and adapt and continue to be there.
Now, you're going to be a grandfather soon, and getting into that stage of your life, so are you going to be helping to introduce games to that generation, and are you going to be gaming up till age 80, 90, and onward?
120, whatever, 120. Yeah, you know. High hopes there.
Very good.
Yeah, always. It's just, like I say, it's a great way to relax and take a break from daily grind.
Now, well, one of the things that I think is really interesting, I guess, contrast between maybe you and me is that, you know, I've only been a gamer for about 5 years, you for far longer than that, a great career in gaming, I guess. And I've noticed that since I've gotten involved in gaming that I see this as a hobby that is something that I feel like is going to be with me for a really long time. Like I'm hoping that in, you know, 20, 30 years, I can sit down with some other podcasters and talk about my long career in gaming. And whereas other things that I've been involved in the past, I used to build radio controlled cars and I play golf occasionally, but gaming is something I feel like is going to stick with me for a long time, and obviously has for you. And is there anything specifically about gaming, do you think, that makes it such a long lasting hobby? I don't hear too many people that just drop completely out of gaming.
No, they don't. They may take a break from it for a while, but they come back to it because it is a great way to take a break.
All right. Well, we really do thank you so much for joining us, James. And listeners, we actually had a real treat tonight. We had the opportunity to play an old classic board game from Avalon Hill called Kingmaker. And so that is going to be the focus of our buy, try, or deny. And so we're going to get into that in a second. But for now, we want to just thank James for joining us. Thanks so much for being on Game On.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And now we'll get into our buy, try, or deny for Kingmaker. Let's make some kings.
Buy, try, or deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started. Well, in this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, we're going to be talking about the game Kingmaker, which is a board game produced by, originally in Britain, by Philmar Limited in 1974. And the second edition was produced by Avalon Hill here in the United States in 1975. The game centers around the conflict called the War of the Roses, which happened in the 15th century in England, in the kind of middle 1400s. It's for 2 to 8 players, and the idea of the game is that each player controls a faction of nobles, and what you're trying to do is to take control of one or more members of these two rival families, the House of Lancaster and the House of York. And there are royal heirs for each of these families that are represented by little cardboard chits on the board. And you're trying to go around and take control of these heirs and then basically go and destroy the other faction. And so the player that is left standing with the most senior, the highest in the line of succession, the heir for one house after the other house has been completely destroyed, is the winner. Now, the way that this comes about and the way the game plays out involves a lot of different kinds of strategy. It's a game that involves both combat, diplomacy, alliances, kind of a, you know, double dealing aspect. So there's a whole lot going on here. It's much more than just a war game or just an area control game. So the components are very simple in this game. You get a board which depicts a map of the 15th century England, and some of the board also includes like Ireland and somewhere, some sort of down into the areas in France. And you're also going to get a whole bunch of cardboard counters that represent the heirs, that also represent the different kinds of nobles in the game that your faction is going to be taking control of. You also have some different colored tokens to represent your particular faction, which will be used to claim areas on the board. You're also going to get some cards, and it's very interesting to see these cards from the 1970s. You know, they're a very light card stock, and almost, I think they're actually perforated on the edges. So it's, I think they may have actually been cut out of, you know, cardboard sprues originally. But you're going to have a resource deck, and then also an event deck, and that is pretty much the entire component list in the game. So real kind of simple components. The artwork is kind of simple, and we'll talk a little bit later about, you know, it's kind of the overall feel of the game. But let's just get into a game turn, and that'll give you an idea of how the game works. So you're going to start off the game with a certain number of these resource cards. And there are several different kinds of resource cards in the game. You have resource cards that depict a particular noble, and such as Lord Neville or you know, Percy or Clifford. They have just sort of these nice English names to them. And then you're also going to have some cards that have titles. Some of the nobles already have titles, the Earl of, you know, Wallingford or the Earl of Sandwich or whatever. But sometimes they're untitled, and so there's some cards that will bestow titles upon them, such as the Duke of Exeter or something like that. And so there's cards for that. There's cards for offices in the government, such as the Marshal of England or the Chancellor of England or something like that. So those are things that you can bestow upon your nobles, give them a job, basically. There's also bishophoods, something like that, where you can bestow the clergy office of bishop onto somebody. There's cards that depict mercenaries. These are going to help to bolster your forces that go along with a particular noble. And then you're also going to have things like ships that will allow you to take control of a ship and move around the board around the sea areas. So that's going to be what's in your resource deck. You're going to start off with a certain number of these cards and lay them out. So you'll have a starting number of nobles. You're going to get the token that's associated with that noble, and then you'll get control of some particular areas on the board. All of the royal heirs are going to start off in specific locations on the board, and part of your job in the game is going to be to kind of go and pick them up and take control of them, and then carry them with you as you're going around and trying to conquer your opponents. The other deck of cards in the game is called the Event Deck, and it's used for a couple of different things, and the cards are actually divided down the middle, and you'll have a particular thing in the top and in the bottom. The top part of the card is going to be the event that's played at the beginning of the round. At the beginning of each person's turn, you're going to turn over an event card, and whatever it depicts is going to play out for that round. So it might be something like a plague in a particular city, which will kill people and will cause certain nobles to die and that kind of stuff. Or it may be a condition where a combat isn't going to occur for that round or something like that. So, or maybe the ship's movement is affected, but it's just a standing effect that might happen for one or more rounds. So you're going to start by turning over that card and reading that event. Then you're going to have a movement phase where you get to move your different nobles around the board as you're sort of collecting troops. These nobles are on their cards have a certain number of troops that go along with them. And the locations on the board also have a number of troops associated with them, a garrison of troops. And so as you're moving around the board, if you want to move in and conquer certain areas or maybe attack a particular noble, there's going to be a comparison between the number of troops that you have and the number of troops that your opponent or that particular area that you're conquering has. And so that's where the sort of the combat happens. So once you've moved around, you can declare combat. And then what you're going to do is sort of count up all the forces that you have, maybe any resource cards you can play that'll increase that. And your opponent will declare that as well. Or if you're attacking kind of a neutral location, that you can determine how many troops are involved there. Then you're going to turn over the next card on the event deck. And I mentioned the card's divided in the middle. The top part of the card, it's going to have that standing event. The bottom part is your conflict resolution, basically, of your battle. And what it's going to say is it's going to tell you what kind of victory needs to occur. So maybe a simple majority would need to occur for victory, where, you know, as long as you have more troops than your opponent, you win. But it might say that you need a 2-1 margin for victory, or a 3-1, or a 5-4. So there's a little bit of math involved, I guess. But it's going to tell you what the victory conditions are, and whoever meets that set of conditions based upon their troops is going to win. If that's the case, then it's on the card. It's going to tell you which nobles, if they were associated with that battle, these particular nobles will die. So it'll have names on the cards, and if they were involved in this combat, then they're going to immediately die. So that's kind of the basis of combat. You're going to be moving around and taking control of things, and hopefully trying to kill off the royal heirs that are in your way to, you know, allowing your royal heir to be the kings, because you're making those kings and kingmaker. And there are a lot of other rules in the game involving things like coronations, where you actually have to go and have a bishop, or actually two bishops or an archbishop, perform a coronation to become king. And you're also, there's also rules involving parliament, where you can call parliament and have votes for things. So there's just a very great historical feel to the game, both the combat aspect and also the diplomacy and the politics that go along, and also the history. It's just sort of like the game sets the stage for how the War of the Roses began, and then you get to play that out in the game. So that's a basic overview of Kingmaker. So we had an opportunity to play a three-player game of Kingmaker tonight. We didn't get all the way through the game. It's a rather lengthy affair, or it can be a lengthy affair. And so we just kind of played it long enough to get a real feel for how the gameplay went. And so let's talk about what we thought of Kingmaker. Cody, what did you think?
I have to admit, going into it, I was dreading it a bit. I hadn't done any research on anything. I just kind of based on looks, and it looked like it was just going to be a slow plot, like just a plotting along of a game, and not very interesting. And the more we got into it, I was having a blast. I mean, I was really just getting into it. I was plotting out my moves, and I was kind of upset we had to stop to record. It's like, I would have rather just played all night. It's a little bit dated in presentation, just as far as like with the boards and the various chits. Like, it's the board's almost too small. I think it's kind of hard to really get your bearings about who, what belongs to who, and where the boundaries are. But it's not a killer by any means. It's still fun, but just the way the mechanics were, it was just enough randomization to keep it interesting. But it rewarded short and long term strategy of play, and there's also a bit of wheeling and dealing and kind of a social interaction. It's really this almost a perfect storm mix of game styles that I really liked.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the random decision maker of the deck of cards, where, you know, you try to build up your troops and you go into attack, and, you know, then you hope you have enough troops built up, enough of a majority that you'll win, but, you know, you turn that card over and you don't know what you're going to get. So to me, that provided the same kind of excitement that rolling a set of dice would in a game like that. So I agree with you, Cody, that I think the, you know, the presentation is, you know, the game came out in the United States in 1976, which was the year I was born. And so, you know, you can definitely see that the quality of game components has really grown and gotten better over, you know, the 30 some odd years. But as far as just gameplay, it really is just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it a lot. Now, James, we really do appreciate you kind of teaching us the rules of this game and getting us started taking a look at this. And I really enjoyed being able to look through. James has the original, you know, cardboard punch out where you punch out the chits. He's still got like the sprues from that in the box. And also the original Avalon Hill game catalog from the 70s there. So it's almost like this great piece of nostalgia to look at in addition to a game. But you know, how is this game compared? I would imagine, since you have it in your collection for such a long time, that it's something you enjoy. But how is this game compared to other games you've played that are like it? And just what's your overall opinion of Kingmaker?
Kingmaker is one of my favorites. It's been around for a long time. I'm a history major, did my graduate work in the field of European church history, medieval history. So it falls into that, since it's 15th century War of the Roses. You have all the historical documentation there with the background as to what happened in history. You have the same basic order of events set and ready on the board. Same factions, same characters. Everything's ready, and then you just step in and take over history from that point, and you get to rewrite history. You make the new alliances. You go after the strategies. You do the the wheeling and dealing with the other characters and other players in the game. And you're starting from reality and moving into a what if this had happened type of gameplay. And because everybody's different, no two games are going to be alike. It's not the same set of spaces that you move around the board in progression and everybody knows, well, I need a 6 or a 7 here, or I got to have a 15 over there, or, you know, here's strategy number one where I got to take this place, this place, this place, and nobody else can beat me. I can get at least a tie out of it. With all the random events in the game, you don't know what's going to happen. You may lose half your force on a flip of a card, or you may gain more than you ever thought when an event goes different.
Yeah, that factor in the game is very interesting. And I when I first sat down to the game, I don't know about you, Cody, but I guess I thought it was going to be a war game. And I guess it really is a war game because it's about the War of the Roses, but it's not like that in a traditional sense. You know, you're comparing these troops, and but to me it just has more of a feel of like a political diplomacy sort of a game with the war element kind of thrown in there as well, because all of that was going on. Like you said, James, it's like it's about stepping into history of what was actually happening, and it wasn't just war that was happening. There was the politics and the nobles and the church and things like that. So I think it does a real good job of sort of synthesizing and synergizing all of those things together into one game.
Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, that's what I think makes this game great, is it's just got enough elements from each type of game to where it doesn't get tired and stale. You know, there is some strategic planning, but then there's just as much politicking, and then there's just as much playing 3 or 4 turns ahead. It's just got, it's almost in a way like Kingsburg is. I mean, the two totally different styles of game, but it's got enough of each element to make it interesting and to kind of appeal to different player senses. So I'm very surprised it hasn't been remade, at least to my knowledge. I don't think it's been remade recently. I think this one, give it maybe the Fantasy Flight polish, or I don't know if they'd be the best company to do it. But I think if this game were given kind of a new look and repackaged, you know, keep the same gameplay, because there's nothing wrong with that, you know, make it more accessible, this would definitely be a winner.
Back in the 90s, it did come out as a computer version on 3.5-inch discs.
No. Oh, really?
And that updated a little bit. It had nice graphics on the screen. But, of course, the original edition came out in England back in the early 70s, about 74. And if you can find one of those, you've got a nice treasure.
Yeah.
But it's gone through several editions. But like you say, I'm surprised since the 90s and the computerization that nothing else has happened with it. I would think it'd be an ideal game.
This seems like
reproduce.
It seems like it would be a game that there's a company called Valley Games that has made some reprints and reissues of games recently, like Demacher and Titan was most recently, with just these really beautiful components. I think if they could make the game with a really big map, like almost like a Railroad Tycoon sized map, and just some, you know, maybe some wood blocks or some other components like that, tokens for the different nobles and so forth, I think people would buy it. I think that there's a lot of nostalgia in it. So much like Talisman, when that new edition came out, a lot of people are going to buy that just for the nostalgia part of it. But I think there's also a really nice deep game there. And we looked on the internet just before turning the mics on here, and I think you can probably on eBay right now find a complete copy of this game, the 1976 edition from Avalon Hill, for about $60, something like that. And they also have some versions of the original 1974 aerial version in Great Britain for about $100. So it's a little bit pricey to get a complete set of this, but I think it's well worth it.
And there's one aside I wanted to bring up. You had a folder that contained an expansion for the game, and I was just amazed how that process went around back then, as far as, because nowadays you can just go to the game store, pick up an expansion. How did it work back then? I mean, I thought this was just amazing.
Well, they published several articles in the General when the game came out, and as it play developed and time went on, and they published an article on a variation with additional cards that could be added in and some additional rules. And at that time, you just ordered it, and it was shipped to you mail order. Wasn't available in the stores so much. But you could get it directly from the publisher. And so I've got the envelope where things were ordered from Avalon Hill, and the mail came, all the additional cards and the extra errata sheet with the changes in the rules, and it went really good.
See, for Game On listeners out here, if you have a copy of a brand new board game that you really enjoy, I would recommend keep it for a long time. Just keep it in no, really, keep it in your collection and just hold on to it. If it's something that you really love to play, hold on to it for 20, 30, 40 years, because when you pull that game out and you play it with a new player, maybe a young person, a child or a grandchild, they're going to look at this game the way that I looked at this copy of Kingmaker tonight, with kind of some wonderment of, it's almost like an antique. It's really, really interesting to see where gaming is now, where it was then, and how people were still sitting down and having fun. We were kind of making fun of the picture on the back of the box, because it had the kind of the 70s haircuts and the very nice earth toned vests and so forth that these youngsters were wearing. But a great game. So I think we probably have a bit of a consensus here, but we'll go ahead and just lay down the question here. Cody, for Kingmaker, great classic game, buy, try, or deny?
Well, it's going to be a buy for me, and it's to the point where I'm actually considering getting on eBay and paying that $60. And
wow.
Yeah, really. It's I went in thinking the worst about this, and I'm just like, oh, it's going to be a slog of a war game, and just... some of those bookcase games I've played, and it's a slog, is to put it nicely. But like I said, this game has it all for me, and it's the learning curve was not nearly as steep. I mean, it's a complex game to a point, but it's not unlearnable. It doesn't take an hour to learn the game by any means. So I would definitely recommend it. And if there's some way you can play it as part of, like, at a convention maybe, where they have a game room, or some other way to definitely try it out, try it there. But as for me, I want to go buy it right now. So it's a buy for me. John, Kingmaker, buy, try, or deny?
It is a definite buy for me as well. I was so pleasantly surprised by this game, and I just can't say enough good things about it. I was, skeptical, just like Cody said, just sitting down to play it. Because I really am a member of the cult of the new, I think. I love the new shiny things. I love the plastic miniatures. I love the dice. I'm all into that kind of stuff. But so when I see you sit down and look at a pretty simple map of a board with little cardboard counters, I just don't get too excited about that. But, gameplay trumps all. If you've got a game that has fun gameplay, it really doesn't matter that much what the components are. You can be pretty forgiving with the components when the gameplay is good. So it's a definite buy for me. All right, so we have a third commentator here. So you get a little bonus buy, try, or deny here. So we'd like to ask you, Mr. James Gazaway, Kingmaker, buy, try, or deny?
Well, since I have it in my collection and I got it again as the computer edition, I would say a buy. But all things aside, honestly and truly, if you enjoy historical recreation, it's great. If you're interested in tabletop wargaming, it works for that. If you like something new that's a little different than a lot of the stuff that's coming out on the market right now, it's fun to go back and look at some of the old games and the way they were played and the mechanics, because those are some of the basics that a lot of the new games are taking and working from, and it helps you see the progression.
All right, well, that's three big buys for Kingmaker. So if you have the means and the ability to find it and go get it, we would definitely recommend it.
So Cody, you better get on eBay real soon and get one before everybody else gets on there and starts bidding it up.
Well, if you want to buy it for me, by all means. Well, what do you say we start to close out the show here?
Sounds good. Well, that just about wraps up episode 14 of Game On with Cody and John. I'd like to thank you so much for listening. We invite you to check out our website at www.gameonpodcast.com. And we also would also like to invite you to send us a message at the Game On inbox, which the address for that is...
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
If you have any questions, comments, or anything about this episode or any previous episode, we'd love to hear from you. So we also have a contest going on that we want to remind you about, where the prize is going to be a brand new copy of Backseat Drawing, courtesy of Out of the Box Games. So the contest involves taking our clues, doing some drawing, and then emailing us at the Game On inbox to tell us what exactly it was we told you to draw. So if you want to rewind the episode there into that segment, and send us what your entry is.
And our next episode will be recorded semi-live from Hoosier Con here at the beautiful gaming capital of the world.
That's right. We'll be talking to lots of everyday gamers who are having fun at the convention, and we'll give you a full rundown of all the fun that we had at HoosierCon. So if you're able to make it out to the convention, come and join us. Come find us, and we'll play some games. So join us in 2 weeks, where we'll have another episode, episode 15. And until then,
game on.